podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So today, it's kind of a little weird. We are recording this during the Serie A matches. I watched Milan earlier. The other teams are starting now. So we're not going to focus too much on Serie A. We have some transfer stuff at the top. We're going to talk about Nainggolan. We have some very cool Twitter questions from our listeners. And we're going to close out with an interview focusing on Juve with Adam Digby. Last week on our Twitter account, we asked you guys which guests you wanted to hear again. And multiple people asked for Adam. So we listened to you. So I think you'll enjoy that interview. But before we get to all that, I'm joined by our great friend, the producer, co-host of the podcast, Alex Goldberg. He's doing a great job covering Chelsea and football in general on YouTube and Twitter. So, Alex, speaking of Chelsea, this kind of broke last week. It was a tweet on Di Marzio's site, an article there on Chelsea thinking about reuniting Sarri with Higuain, with Morata potentially going to Milan. So without getting, and we'll get into the nitty-gritty of the negotiation, but since you're a big Chelsea guy and you've been following Serie A a lot, I have to ask you, what was your initial reaction when you saw the report?
Well, it certainly wasn't a surprise, because going back to the summer, Higuain was definitely one of the players, maybe the player that Maurizio Sarri was rumored to want. Now, Sarri, of course, says that he doesn't really like to get involved too much in the transfer market, but it would be understandable if he did make a couple requests to Chelsea about who he'd like. And we know that he has a great relationship with Higuain. So certainly not an element of surprise, especially considering what's going on with Alvaro Morata. Everybody, even big Morata fans, seem to have just given up at this point, just because there's really no more animosity towards Morata. It didn't really work out. Sarri tried. Sarri views himself as a coach before a manager. So if anybody could have done it, it was Sarri with Morata. But Morata just does not have the mentality for the Premier League. So considering Higuain and his relationship with Sarri, and then the fact that Morata is really just not in the picture anymore, it wasn't surprising. Now, when I think about it further, it's not the sexy signing that Chelsea fans want. Now, there's also rumors about Chelsea maybe getting a transfer ban sooner rather than later. So Chelsea fans are really, really panicking about the fact that maybe it's all they have is January to make acquisitions, maybe the summer. So I know many Chelsea fans are wanting the shiny new toy of a Icardi or a Timo Werner in the Bundesliga, especially before the transfer window closes. So I would say that the main negative, David, for Chelsea fans is the fact that he's 31 years old, Higuain. He's not in great form himself. In fact, Milan just played and he missed many chances. But on the flip, the way I'm looking at it is more short term and more on the, okay, well, he's 31 years old, so that doesn't tie you down long term. Even if there is a transfer ban coming, it doesn't mean you can't then acquire someone in the summer as well, the sexier signing. He has a proven track record with Maurizio Sarri, which is vastly more important than just randomly looking at somebody who can score goals but has never really played in the Premier League or in a familiar system. Higuain's familiarity with Maurizio Sarri's system is really crucial, and I feel like Chelsea fans should really know that how crucial that is, because whenever Chelsea struggle, it's really them not taking well to the system, them forgetting what they're supposed to do. So I really don't think anybody should overlook his relationship with Maurizio Sarri. And then they clearly like each other also on a personal level, so that matters as well. And then compare him to who would be probably going the other way, Alvaro Morata. Morata has, I know he's younger, but he has never scored more than 15 goals in a league season. David, Gonzalo Higuain has scored more than 15 goals in a league season 8 times. I mean, he is just such a more proven goal scorer. One of Chelsea's main problems is not having enough goal scorers. Higuain would come into the Chelsea side and immediately be one of their top three goal scorers with Eden Hazard and Pedro. So I'm not completely jumping up and down at my reaction to the possibility of Higuain coming to Stamford Bridge, but it makes sense. It would make the team better. And the number one priority for Chelsea right now is finishing top four so they can qualify for the Champions League next year. And I think Gonzalo Higuain would help them do that. So that's my take on it, David. But let me ask you, what are the odds it actually happens?
So well said. I appreciate your perspective. So to me, it's really simple. If you told me that Chelsea can sign Icardi in January, yeah, I'd say that's a no-brainer. Get him. Don't get Higuain. But that's not going to happen, and that's for every team. Like, he's staying at Inter in January. Timo Werner, I'm not that familiar with him as a player or his situation. And if you told me they can get him, yeah, that sounds like a better deal. But we know in January it's not that easy to make these sorts of moves. Last January, Chelsea came close to getting Edin Dzeko. I think Higuain's at least as good. I'd rather have Higuain over Dzeko. Not by a lot, but I'd rather have him. And yeah, he is 31, but he's a very young 31 in the sense that he just turned 31 a few weeks ago. And you mentioned the Sarri connection. So I think, you know, there's a big discrepancy between those who don't really follow Serie A and know Higuain mainly from the World Cup and Argentina, and maybe following him recently at Milan, where there's no way around it. He's been a disaster, but this is the worst team he's been on in over 10 years. He's not getting service, and that would really change at Chelsea. And as you mentioned, Morata's a total bust then, and I was a big Morata guy. I really thought he was going to do well at Chelsea. It didn't work out, so it's time to move on. And this potential move, if it happens, it makes me think of what Obama used to tell to all his cabinet members. Better is good. You know, sometimes we want perfection and we want to do something that's perfect, but sometimes we can't. And even just doing something better, that is good too. But back to the deal. So let's look at it. And, you know, this transfer is right in my wheelhouse because there are a couple of things that you guys hear me talk a lot about transfers on our podcast, and this is amortization and context. I don't just look at deals anymore, just as player X is going to player Y. There's just a lot more involved with it. So let's start with amortization first. And for Chelsea, let's look at their angle. They spent a lot on Morata. On the open market, very unlikely they're going to get, you know, whatever his amortized value left's got to be at least 50 million. And whatever it is, they're not going to get close to that. By the same token, Juve, who still owns Higuain, and they are a factor in this, ultimately they have to agree to the transfer. The worst thing that can happen for Juve, they are not happy that Higuain hasn't worked out at Milan, because in an ideal world, Milan, who already invested 18 million in Higuain, exercised the option to acquire him for 36 million in the summer. Then he goes off Juve's books. So the amortized value goes off Juve's books, but more importantly, they don't bring back Higuain's huge wages before taxes, which would count against Juve's books as well. So Juve is very motivated for him not to come back. They would have loved for him to work out at Milan, although it's in the same league, just because of the enormous cost. So that didn't happen. So now Juve has to find a solution. And when it comes to Chelsea, this is where context is important. I'm sure you guys remember the Cuadrado to Juve deal, which was really a kind of an odd deal. At first, he went on loan. Then he went back to Chelsea. Then he went back to Juve on a 2 or 3 year loan with a forced option to buy at the end. And why was the deal structured that way? The deal was structured, again, for amortization. Chelsea had invested a lot in Cuadrado. He didn't work out for them either. They couldn't have him on the books. They couldn't take a loss, sell him for less than what his amortized value was left, because that has a very negative impact on clubs' books. So they basically told Juve, take him off our hands. You can keep him. You control him. He counts essentially against your cap for the salary. We're not taking a loss on the amortized value until the contract expires, and then we break even. I wouldn't be surprised if the Higuain deal, if it happens, is in a very similar structure, in a very similar way. Like, maybe he goes to Chelsea on a 2 year loan or whatnot. Now, the other context that's important is Milan with the situation with Higuain and bringing in potentially Alvaro Morata. Let's look at the situation. Milan has a lot going on with Chelsea. Bakayoko, who I thought today against Frosinone, was one of the only positive things we saw in the match. Bakayoko has been really good for them. But his option is considerable. Even if he keeps playing this way, Milan has their financial fair play issues as well. So if they take Morata and this Higuain deal, which I think we agree, at least for the rest of the season, that's advantage Chelsea. You'd rather have Higuain than Morata, although Morata has been good in Italy. Then in the context of the Bakayoko deal, maybe they go wink, wink, you know, let's do this deal, but you agree to definitely take Bakayoko off our hands. And then the final piece. And oh, this is Cesc Fabregas. This is another player that Milan is pursuing. That's with Chelsea. So maybe they look at all these deals kind of combined and they try to make it work financially in a way that works for all involved. Milan has their financial fair play issues. Chelsea, you know, doesn't want to take losses on these players. So maybe they work it out. And this is why context and amortizations are key deals in transfers. So let's stay on transfers, Alex. Another big story that came out a few days ago is Juve's interest in Aaron Ramsey for Arsenal. So let me ask you, you followed him, watched them a lot more. You've become an expert on Juve. You've watched them a lot. What types of qualities would he bring to Juve's midfield, in your opinion?
Well, actually, David, I think he's a rather good fit. It's definitely not a player that I had ever thought about in a Juventus shirt before the rumor came about, especially since he's English, and I just don't see a lot of English players in other leagues, especially on other top teams. But when I consider Aaron Ramsey's qualities, he's a very well-rounded midfielder. He can do a little bit of everything. I would definitely say he's closer to a CAM than a CDM. By no means is he a defensive midfielder, but you can definitely just classify him as a CM. He can put in a tackle. He doesn't neglect his defensive responsibilities, but he definitely is more comfortable in the attacking phase, but he can do a little bit of everything. He's never been a huge goal scorer, but he's not a liability goal scoring. He has had a season where he scored 10 goals, and he's had seasons where he's had 6, 7, 8 assists. So he's capable in that department. And by the way, 10 goals and 6, 7, 8 assists is perfectly good for a CM. Juve would not even be asking him to do that much in that role. So I really think Aaron Ramsey would fit quite well into Juve's side, especially since I don't think Max Allegri is going to be putting a lot on his plate to start. And the other thing is, if Max Allegri, David, put a lot on Aaron Ramsey's plate to start, well, that would be a mistake. Aaron Ramsey has played for a long, long time. He's still only 28, but we always talk about what age really is like. Sometimes we call like Cesc Fabregas older than his actual age. You just called Higuain maybe a fresh 31. I think Aaron Ramsey's an old 28 because he's been playing for a while and he's also endured a lot of injuries. So like I said, if Max Allegri is going to put a lot on his plate, that's maybe not the wisest idea, because Aaron Ramsey has barely had any seasons where he's played over 30 appearances. In fact, he's never had a season where he has started 30 league games. So he's somebody that you're definitely going to want to ease in. But I really do think he can fit quite well with a Khedira, an Emre Can, a Matuidi, because I think if you definitely take Bentancur out of the equation, he's something that Juve arguably don't have. So I think he'll just make Juve even more complete and even more well-rounded. So, David, that's my take. What's the latest on the negotiation with Aaron Ramsey?
So, yeah, it's an interesting one. So his contract is up at the end of the season. He's a Bosman transfer, really fits the criteria of the type of Bosman transfer Juve pursues. We know Pirlo, Khedira, Emre Can, like he fits that mold there. I have to say, I still find it amusing that people still refer to these transfers as free transfers. I honestly thought the Emre Can press release where they said, you know, he's costing us $16 million, basically agent commissions, which, by the way, count on the books just like a transfer fee. Like, ultimately, someone's getting paid, like what they teach you in economics class. There's no such thing as a free lunch. Like, someone's getting paid. It's not the former team, it's more the agent. Basically, the player gets to the end of the contract, and then the agent and the player control that aspect of the transfer. So it would be very expensive. There's no way around it. Also, because Inter was also interested in Ramsey, but he's asking for a salary that's higher than what Inter is proposing to Icardi for his extension. So if you read between the lines, that means he's asking for at least over 8 million euro net of taxes. So that's 16 million gross. So on top of that, you have to pay him an inflated salary and the agent commission. So it would be an expensive move. But look, you know, if he's healthy, he's probably, you're getting him at a discount compared to paying for a transfer fee. So Inter's out because of the wages. PSG is a player in this, but he seems more intrigued by the Juve project. It's funny that you mentioned, you know, British players in Serie A. We haven't really seen much. David Platt was actually at Juve in the 90s. Didn't work out great, did okay at Sampdoria. So it would be an interesting fit there. So let's see what happens. We know Juve is really good with these Bosman transfers, and he might be the next one.
All right. So, David, to segue to the next thing we're going to talk about here at the top, It's definitely been in the news over Christmas, over Christmas Eve. This is not a player I'm surprised that is making the news. He is certainly not a boring player or a boring personality. I got to ask you, what was your reaction? And fill me in as well. What was your reaction to Rajah Nainggolan's suspension?
And there's a lot to chew on, so I have a lot of thoughts on this. So, you know, look, I've been wrong plenty of times. People like to remind me. I know. But I will take a small victory lap on Nainggolan. I think I was one of the very few people who on the day that deal happens was like, I'm not so sure this is a great deal for Inter. So the way I see it, I'm not surprised he was suspended. I'm not sure this has much to do with Marotta arriving at Inter and bringing the Juve discipline. Maybe that's something to do with it. But this made me think a lot more about another former Juve director, and this is Luciano Moggi, who has a great book, to me, one of the best books on calcio called Il Pallone Lo Porto Io. And he had a chapter on like players that party and their impact on the pitch. And he basically, the title of the chapter is Deci del Campo, the pitch decides. And he basically was saying, look, you know, if you party a lot and you then perform on the pitch, no one's going to care. And he used a great example of Montero, the great defender on Juve, who was like a party animal. He used to go out all the time and used to play great on 2 hours of sleep. Because he was so good on the pitch, nobody cared. And ironically, once Montero got married and stopped partying, that's when he wasn't playing well. So Moggi went up to him and was like, listen, I know your wife's going to get mad, but you need to get out there more. You need to go back out clubbing. So to me, this isn't so much Marotta. This is just Nainggolan's performances aren't worth the headaches anymore. It was reported he was late multiple times after the disappointing draw against Chievo. He went out partying, showed up late at practice, and that happened multiple times. The other couple of things that I find fascinating on this Nainggolan story is all the leaks that are coming out on the media. He definitely has some enemies, and maybe Inter's playing this game quite well with the media. It was leaked out that he has these big gambling debts, that someone cloned like his checkbook, like he had signed this huge check to a casino in Monte Carlo for 150 euros. So this stuff is leaking out. They're really not putting him in a great light. And the final thing that happened, and this was yesterday on Christmas Day, this tape emerged of him talking to a friend, and it sounds really like him, saying that he wants to go back to Roma, and now he's just going to create a lot of chaos at Inter to make it happen, and he's going to try to get Totti to help him there. And to me, you know, in the summer, and we talked about it on the podcast, you know, someone at Roma told me that, look, this summer when Roma was going with young players, they were like, we're going to ship out Rajah no matter what. We cannot have him as a bad influence on our players. We can't have this one of our best players and iconic players be such a party animal, you know, be a bad role model. We can't, you know, tell our players not to do certain things when he breaks all the rules. So to me, it's really interesting. It seems like Nainggolan's trying to pull a Bonucci and go back to his former club. Look, to be honest, even if you read his statements when he joined Inter, he really didn't seem that into it to begin with. But I think right now it reminds me of a scene in The Wire where Avon tells Stringer, you're a man without a country. And I kind of feel like right now Nainggolan is in this space. I know a lot of Roma fans would want him back. I'm not so sure the club would want him. Maybe things have changed since I spoke to that person. So I think he's in a tough spot. I know some Premier League fans were telling me, oh, we'd love to have him. I just don't know. To me, this isn't the Nainggolan, the player that he was. I always like to say young players get often overrated because of a small sample size. And I think veteran players, sometimes it takes a year or two for their perception to catch up to their performances. He just hasn't been the same player for a while. So I wish Nainggolan the best. I do appreciate how real he is and how he doesn't sugarcoat his image in a way I find it refreshing. But right now, he's like a Stringer Bell, a man without a country. So now let's get to our Twitter questions. As always, thank you to our fantastic listeners. You can send us questions on Serie A, transfers, TV, music, films, podcasting, you name it. Just use the CalcioLand hashtag. And which ones are we going to over today, Alex?
All right, David, let's start off with this one. Will Roma and Lazio's inconsistencies allow Milan to sneak into the top four after weathering the storm with injuries?
So, mind you, this question was sent to us before this horrible match Milan had against Frosinone. I doubt this question would have come in after. But I have to say, you know, one of the best things Gattuso has going for him so far this season has been how poor Roma and Lazio, how inconsistent they've been. Gun to the head, if you ask me who's going to finish fourth, I'm going to take Lazio. It's close. I just don't know. Milan, the soft part of the schedule, have really struggled. Maybe they'll get a boost in the January window with Paqueta. If the Morata deal happens, look, I think Morata is going to do better in Serie A than he did at Chelsea. But I also don't know if Morata is going to be what we thought Higuain was going to be. And everyone that had Milan fourth went on the assumption that Higuain was going to be a 15 to 20 goal scorer season. Is Morata going to average that once he arrives at Milan? That remains to be seen. So let's see what happens there. But it's going to be a tough race for fourth. To me, it's going to be not who the best team, it's who the least worst out of these teams going to end up being the rest of the way.
All right, David, next Twitter question. Besides stadiums, what are some of the things Serie A should be doing to grow?
Well, I think for one, the way the league is broadcast and shown, like here in the U.S., I think ESPN has been a big plus. I think in other markets, it's important that the product be visible. I think people that actually watch Serie A tend to really enjoy it. So I think it needs to be more accessible. I think teams are doing very much better on social media. We have a lot more team-specific English language accounts. Everyone knows how great the Roma account is. I think Inter is making some nice moves. I think you'll see Juve has a pretty intriguing project for their English account next year, which you'll be hearing more about on the podcast soon. So that's going to happen. But to me, the most important is a competition for the title. I think last season it would have been fantastic for Serie A had Napoli won the title. There just doesn't really seem to be any legit rival to Juve this season. So that to me is what is needed the most.
All right, David, interesting question here. Who would do a better job at Inter? Spalletti, Jose Mourinho, or Diego Simeone, or an exorcist?
You want to guess who sent this question, Alex?
Is it prisoner of the moment?
You got it. Prisoner, the new MVP of the podcast. So I put these two questions together because to me, the way Serie A could grow, this is my ideal scenario. I doubt it's going to happen, especially one of them. But this is my dream scenario for manager situation. Allegri stays at Juve, Inter hires Simeone, Milan hires Conte, and Roma hires Mourinho. We talked about it on one of our last podcasts. We got great feedback. Everyone was like, yes, Mourinho at Roma would be fantastic. It probably will never happen because of Mao's ties to Inter, also because Roma doesn't pay managers that much, but they would love him in Rome, and I think Mourinho would love it there. So that's kind of my dream. That's my New Year wish. As far as the answer prisoners of the moment question, for me, it's very simple. Simeone is the best option. An exorcist definitely would be in line too. Pazza Inter moment keep happening. I mean, who would have thought that Nainggolan at Pazza Inter would have been a disaster? I think if you didn't see that one coming, you don't know much about history. But I think, you know, more than Inter, I think Milan needs an exorcist. I mean, look at how many times Milan has changed the directors, ownership, players. The results almost all feel the same. I think what Milan hasn't tried is they haven't brought in a big name coach, and that needs to happen. I think no matter what happens next with Gattuso, they cannot hire one of their former players to be the manager. That can happen. So, Alex, let me ask you. If you were Milan, what would be better? Do you think it would be better if they hired Arsene Wenger or Antonio Conte?
Oh, man, David, this question is really set up for me to compliment Antonio Conte. So this feels weird, but I'm definitely saying Antonio Conte. With Arsene Wenger, he just hasn't been nearly as familiar, obviously, with Serie A as Antonio Conte. But he also has just been so tied to one club, and that's, of course, Arsenal, that I'm not saying he was never a great manager. He certainly was. But when you're so tied to one club and one way of how things are done, even in a country, I don't know, you're a little risky going to another country with a whole different style and culture. Antonio Conte has been in Italy before. He's obviously supremely comfortable there. He knows the league. He knows the area. He knows Milan. He knows it all. So if he were to go to Milan, I feel like it wouldn't be that bad of an adjustment period. As you always point out, David, he is the perfect manager to bring you from A to B, which is still kind of what Milan is looking for. I definitely don't think they're at B yet. Maybe they're on their way from A to B. They're improved compared to past years, but they're not at B yet, and he can get them there. And then also from a personnel standpoint, I mean, I joked last time you asked me this question, I joked that he was my answer just because Bakayoko is there and he liked Bakayoko. But beyond that, I feel like AC Milan can really line up having a three-man defense. Now, David, you also have told people, you told Chelsea fans when Antonio Conte arrived that Antonio Conte has played other formations besides a back three. But recently, he clearly has been most comfortable with a back three. And when you have Romagnoli and Musacchio, and they've even been playing Abate at center back and Zapata, and of course, Caldara is somebody that they have, it does seem like they could play a back three. And then not to mention even more, someone like Ricardo Rodriguez, for me, is really a wing back. I mean, that's really the position he is. So I feel like a lot of their personnel could line up very well in a 3-5-2 or however Antonio Conte wants to play, 3-4-3 like he played with Chelsea. And also Donnarumma, not great with his feet. He's certainly not a sweeper keeper. Well, that doesn't matter as much to Antonio Conte. So I feel like a lot of the personnel is already kind of made for Antonio Conte. And if I'm comparing him to Arsene Wenger, I just think he's a much less risky fit in Serie A. So that's my take, David. So moving from Antonio Conte to another Antonio, David, could you see Antonio Candreva on Torino? He gets limited playing time at Inter, and Torino could use his crossing ability.
So I'm not sure if the listener was trolling with the crossing ability. There's a lot of, Twitter jokes on all the crosses that Candreva does that never lead to anything. But it's an interesting idea because actually Candreva would fit in really well in Mazzarri's formation at Torino. I feel with Niang gone, they kind of miss a kind of a winger in that ilk. And so I'm not opposed to the idea. I'm actually a pretty big fan of Candreva as a player, but right now he just earns way too much for Torino. Inter would have to chip in for that. Candreva had also been linked to Monaco at the end of the summer. Wouldn't be surprised if those talks revive in January. His agent's very plugged in with Monaco. So let's see if that happens there. But as far as Torino goes, unless Inter chips in a lot of the wages, kind of like when Ranocchia went to Sampdoria, I don't see it happening.
All right, David, next Twitter question. Is Die Hard the best Christmas movie?
So I love this. In the past few years, Die Hard, and I think it was the 30th anniversary of its release this year, there seems to be like a lot of, momentum of people saying it's a Christmas movie and all. And look, you know, it takes place on Christmas. There are a little bit of jokes on Christmas, but I don't think it really checks the boxes of a Christmas movie. But it's definitely a pretty cool Twitter joke to call it that. But that made me do my own list of some of the best, more traditional Christmas movies, and I have a couple that I really enjoy. I like the National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. That's a classic. To me, another great Christmas movie and more that fits the definition more than Die Hard is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I'm a fan of Elf. Not a lot of people like that, but I actually really enjoy that movie. And I'll give you one of the most underrated Christmas movies, and this is kind of like Die Hard, which is loosely Christmas movie, although I think more so then Die Hard is Gremlins. I actually think that's actually, like, I used to watch it as a kid, and I didn't realize all the symbolism and the sarcasm and irony in that movie, but rewatching it as an adult, I really enjoyed it, and it's a really good movie. So if you're looking kind of for a movie to watch around the holidays, I know Christmas just passed, check out Gremlins. And while we're on the topic of Christmas, on a little bit of a more serious note, I want to dedicate this episode of Calcioland, we're recording it right after Christmas, to anyone who's listening, you know, who is sad, lonely, regretful around the holidays. That happens a lot. It's pretty common. So anyone who's listening and has struggled the past few days and even not looking forward to New Year's Eve and all that, like, this episode's dedicated to you. The advice that I want to give you is don't ever judge, you know, how you feel about yourself by trying to compare yourself to the outside appearances of other people, especially in this age of social media. Like, everyone just puts their best foot forward on social media. Some of the people that I know on Instagram and that I follow on Instagram, it's like, that's not their life. Like, I know enough about them to know that that's not their life. And I can tell you, you know, even when you just think about other people, you know, had someone told me 5-6 years ago the situation that I'm in today, I'm very fortunate. I would have said, oh, I'd be so happy. I'd have no problems, no issues at all. But guess what? You know, I've been really fortunate. But just like everyone else, I have some moments where I struggle. So just don't let the outside appearances of other people get you down. So I want to take this opportunity to thank our listeners, anyone that sent in questions. Thank you. If you want to give a late Christmas present to Alex and I, please leave us a review on iTunes. That really, really helps us a lot. Just search for Cultureland on your podcast app. Leave us 5 stars. If you want to leave a comment, we read them all. And before we get to the interview, Alex, I'd like for you to tell our listeners about a product you and I have been using recently by our friends at BioCBD. Plus, I've really enjoyed this product, but tell our listeners a little bit more about this and how they can get their hands on some themselves.
Yeah. So, David, you and I are both pretty genuine guys. We're not going to really talk about something that we don't use or we don't believe in. So it's only appropriate we're talking about something that you and I are both currently using and loving. And that, as you said, is the products from BioCBD Plus. BioCBDPlus.com. What they are is they have many, many different CBD products. So CBD, only CBD, completely legal. They have so many benefits, so many benefits. Now, one of the main things I think you and I are both using is their vape pen, which we all know vaping is kind of big these days in many ways, shapes, and forms. But this is a completely legal way to just go about your business, have a vape pen. And what it does is it really takes your stress down. It makes you feel more relaxed. It really can have so many positive outcomes from using the vape pen. I'll use it when I wake up in the morning. I take a little bit and it really eases me into the day. Or, hey, you're stuck in traffic and you're getting frustrated. Take that pen, easy to have on the go, and it really will make you feel a lot more relaxed. But there are really a lot of positive outcomes you can have from this pen and from their vaping altogether. And then another product I just want to quickly talk about, because I just used it yesterday, David, as did my girlfriend, is their topical oil, their CBD oil. Yeah. I had a stomach ache. And normally when you have a stomach ache, you think to yourself, well, I'm going to take, I'm going to take this. I'm going to take some Pepto-Bismol, whatever you take for your stomach ache. You're going to have some ginger ale, whatever. But actually, not to get too in-depth and too TMI, but I took the oil, rubbed it on my stomach, and David, no lie, within 5 minutes, I really felt much relief. And that happens. I had a headache last week. I rubbed it on my temples. Immediate relief. There are so many positive outcomes. We'll talk about this on future episodes. We'll start to give you more of their lingo and everything like that. But we wanted to just give you a heads up about what we're using. And once again, that's BioCBD Plus, BioCBDPlus.com. And for our listeners, if you want to go out and already, just by hearing me spiel about it right now, you want to go out and try some of their products, use our discount code. You'll get 15% off. Our discount code is Cultureland15. Once again, that's Cultureland, all lowercase, 15, and you'll get 15% off their products. If you have some little extra money after the holidays or you're just interested in this, once again, Cultureland15, BioCBD Plus, you'll really enjoy their products. And David and I can definitely both vouch for how good they are.
Okay, so let's close it out with a great interview with Adam Digby. We went deep on Juve, looked at their season so far. Just keep in mind, this was recorded before the match against Atalanta. So we'll almost certainly do another episode before the new year. So keep the questions coming, and we look forward to chatting with you soon. Okay, for the interview part of the podcast, as you guys know, we like to take deep dives on the top teams in Serie A from time to time. And a few days ago, I asked our Twitter followers on Cultureland who they wanted to hear back. And we had quite a few requests to have Adam Digby back to chat about Juve. So for those of you that aren't familiar with Adam's work, he covers Serie A for various publications, especially 442, BR Football, and he is the author of the brilliant book Juventus, A History in Black and White. If you're looking for a late Christmas gift, if you forgot a gift for someone, this would be a great one. So, Adam, thanks so much for joining me today.
No problem. And you tweeting it from all those burner accounts would help me get back on eventually.
All right, buddy. So let me ask you, we go into the end of the year with Juve with a significant lead in Serie A. They won their group stage in the Champions League. So on paper, you know, you would think it's almost impossible to do better. But we know how Juve fans are on Twitter. There's always some complaining. So let me ask you, what grade would you give Juve so far this season?
I think you're probably looking to a B or a C. I think it's definitely a case when you're complaining about anything negative to do with Juve, it's very much a first world problems kind of issue. But I think you look at the fact that they lost the second encounter with Manchester United in the Champions League after dominating it for probably 85, 86 minutes. They should have won that game, and certainly they should have beaten Young Boys as well. So even though they topped the group, so it's complaining over nothing. And I think, as always, really, the this kind of sluggish, slow style of play that we always see with Juve under Allegri from September through February, it's always the same, isn't it? You don't want to complain about it. You know that's how it's going to be. But I think when you look at the amount of attacking talent, I think you kind of have to be disappointed that it is so pragmatic, even though you understand the fact that he does it to conserve energy, to make sure the team hits March and April in peak condition, and then can play well for the rest of the season. So it's understandable that they haven't quite been firing on all cylinders. If you can say that for a team who topped the Champions League group and sit clear at the top of Serie A. But I think if you're grading them against the teams they want to be graded against, the Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, echelon, then you have to be harsh and you have to say that there is room for improvement. And I think Allegri and his team would be the first to admit that.
Very interesting. So before we get to the big names, I want to ask you about two players that have stood out to me. You know, we're heading into the January transfer window, and what I like to do is look back at some deals from the past and look at how different they look, you know, once we have a little bit less of, we have more time to evaluate it. And I think of Rodrigo Bentancur when the deal with Carlos Tevez happened, how Juve got ravaged by some fans for being a charity case with Tevez. And then De Sciglio, which for better or worse was somewhat involved with that Bonucci deal that sent him to Milan. And now I have to say, with their performances, those deals look very different. So let me ask you, of these two players, who has surprised you more this season?
To be honest, I don't think I'm really surprised by either. I think with Bentancur in his first season, I think you could see that there was a very good player waiting to break out there. I went to a Champions League game against Olympiakos where I think it was Pjanic was injured in the warm-up, and he had to start on about 50 minutes notice. And he was spectacular that day, just like he is. He was the same player he is today. His passing was neat. He got forward when he could. He held his position when he needed to. And he just displayed the same intelligence that he's showing week in and week out now. And then I think, added to that, his performances at the World Cup. I don't think you can really be surprised by what he's brought. I think the one thing you would say now is, you're saying about Tevez, I think the bad part of that deal now is that the fact that Boca Juniors have a 50% sell-on clause in Bentancur's contract with Juve. That might be the one part of the deal that needs revisiting and looks bad in hindsight, because Bentancur is special. Hopefully Juve hang on to him, and that 50% sell-on doesn't really matter. But I think that's the bit that looks to be a bit of an issue. I think with De Sciglio, I think Matai De Sciglio is the player that he always threatened to be. I think the main difference this season has been that he's managed to stay healthy. He's always been a very reliable fullback. I think you'd struggle to name a better backup fullback in Serie A right now than De Sciglio. I think he's shone when he's been brought into the lineup. He's happy enough to be the good soldier and take a seat on the bench when when he's not needed. And he provides a good balance in some games where it's okay to have one of the fullbacks, either João Cancelo or Alexandro, bombing forward, but you need the other one to kind of be more disciplined and sit and hold. He's perfect for that. I think if you were looking at a Juve player who really has surprised, I think João Cancelo is the one for me. I think
yeah.
He last summer, he signed for over 40 million euros. And you think for a fullback, that's a lot of money. It's almost double what they paid for Alexandro. He was okay at Inter, but he kind of struggled to be a defender in any shape or form. And I think we saw that in his first few games at Juve too. I was very doubtful that he could fit into a Juve back four under Allegri and show the defensive diligence and the tactical discipline to play that role. But I think over the past couple of months, he's been spectacular. He's kind of been a player we thought Juve were signing when they signed Dani Alves.
Yeah, for sure.
He's incredible. I would say he's probably the second best footballer on Juventus' squad at the moment after Cristiano Ronaldo. I think technically he's got everything. And he's just an excellent, excellent football player. And he brings everything you could ask for in a fullback. He's superb.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. It's amazing how at first some people saw the transfer fee as a tax on Mendes to get Ronaldo, and now it looks like a complete a bargain. So let me ask you about a player.
Even that, 140 million for Cancelo and Ronaldo, it looks like a steal.
That's for sure. So let me ask you about a player you interviewed last year. It was a really interesting interview, and this is Juve's goalkeeper, Szczęsny. So I thought last season he was brilliant, erased a lot of the doubts on if he could replace Buffon. And this season it's been a little bit more up and down. I think also having Pedin as a backup might cause, you know, more questioning of his performance. But what do you make of what he's done so far this season now that he's the clear number one?
I think he's been a little bit like I was saying about Juve as a whole at the beginning. He's kind of been good, but not great. There's room for him to improve. I think you're right to look at the arrival of Perrin, because I think allied with Buffon's departure, I think it's kind of thrown maybe a little bit of doubt over what Szczęsny's role is. I think when Buffon was there, he was the clear number two. He was going to play in the cup games. He was going to play in the Champions League games that didn't really matter. And then occasionally, like Torino away, he'd get thrown into an important game, but a game that Juve should be winning comfortably. And I think on the surface, it looks as if that's the reverse now. He's the number one and Matteo Perrin gets those games. But I think if you know the history of Juve and you look at the quality of Perrin, I think that you can see that eventually he's going to become the number one. And that must throw a little bit of doubt into Szczęsny's mind about what his long-term position is, both at Juve and in general, where he's going to probably have to move on to regular football. Because I think Perrin is a better goalkeeper. I think he's been very unfortunate with injuries. I think he's a little bit behind in his development of where you would expect for his age. But I think once he gets a good run of games under his belt and shows what he can do when he adapts to life at Juve, I think he's going to be the clear number one, and I don't think it's going to take very long for that time to arrive. And I think with Juve having a long history of having an Italian goalkeeper, whether it's Combi, Zoff, Tacconi, Peruzzi, Buffon, I think the times where they have turned to other goalkeepers or to the like Edwin van der Sar, it's not gone so well. And I think we kind of know that with a lot more foreign players needing to be brought in the outfield positions, goalkeeper is really the one department where Italy and Italian football isn't struggling to produce quality. And I think Juve know they can rely on having a core of central defenders and goalkeepers from Italy. And that's important to the identity of the team. It's important to the identity of the club. And I think it looks as if that's thrown a little bit of doubt into Szczęsny's mind. And then his performance has kind of suffered as a result. He's not the commanding performance who knows he has to deliver, because otherwise he'll just go back to the bench and Buffon will play. So I think that's kind of where we are, really.
Okay, so I like that historical angle on that. So let's keep that going. A historical player in Juve's history is Zibi Boniek, who was known as Bello di Notte because of his performances in the the Coppa Campioni at the time, the Champions League today. So Boniek, you know, wasn't great in Serie A, but the bright lights came on in Europe and he showed up. And I have this season with Dybala, I want to ask you if you are a little bit concerned with the big gap that we see in the Champions League. He's been brilliant. He's been Juve's best goal scorer. In Serie A, not so much. Is this a Boniek effect, or do you see a little bit more and reason for concern with Dybala?
It's hard because I think Dybala, you're looking for kind of a Neymar or Mbappe kind of breakout. And we kind of get that in spells. He started off last season. He was incredible at the start. He had a few hat tricks and he had more goals than he'd played games for quite a while in the first few months of last season. And then he kind of petered out. And he's kind of carried that on this season. He can be excellent. He was superb against Valencia when Cristiano was suspended in the Champions League. And then he seems to struggle with the more mundane. Even yesterday with Roma in the league, he's not. He's not bringing his best, and that's the kind of game you've got to be up for. And I think having Ronaldo at the club kind of must help him with that, and must help him to get over that, because he's a player who looks to be incredible, whether it's Frosinone in the league on a Wednesday night or it's Barcelona in the Champions League away from home. He always wants to be the best he can be. And that's the attitude that Dybala needs to have. I think the one thing that's quite funny about the Boniek name of being beautiful at night is, it, like all of the nicknames that Gianni Agnelli gave to Juve players, it was always double-edged. It was you're great in the Champions League, but you're rubbish on a Sunday afternoon. he did the same to Del Piero, Baggio. All of the players that Boniek gave a nickname to, it was always a backhanded compliment. There was always a but thrown in with the nickname, and it's definitely, that applies to Dybala. He has been spectacular in the Champions League. He was great in both games against Manchester United. Obviously, he scored the crucial goal in the game away at Old Trafford, which is no mean feat, you know. But then he's very, very poor in the mundane Serie A games, and we do need to see that eradicated. I also think there's a little bit of other players step up, and Ronaldo obviously overshadows everybody, but I think in some of the more mundane Serie A games, he's been rested or he's been brought in off the bench, and that kind of affects you too. Whereas when you know the Champions League or the big league games come around, it's going to be Mandzukic, Ronaldo, Dybala. And I think we even saw that kind of broken up earlier in the season, where Bernadeschi came in and kind of seemed to fit better alongside Mandzukic and Ronaldo. And maybe it is a little bit of that. But I think, there's definitely cause for concern, because a player as gifted and as talented as Dybala clearly is, you want to see him at his best constantly. And maybe it is just a couple of months where he's going through a rough patch, because we've seen this before. We've seen him really, really struggle. He lost his place, as I said, at the start of the season to Bernadeschi, and there's always Douglas Costa waiting to step up. But he seems to always come back with some big, important games and some match-winning performances. And we'll probably see that again. He just seems to be very inconsistent, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess he's consistent with his inconsistency. So let's talk about Ronaldo. So I think he's played basically every game this season. He's definitely had an impact on the pitch for sure. But I think, you know, Juve, with this acquisition, they were looking at it not just as a way to try to win the Champions League, but also start bridging the gap financially and, you know, brand-wise with some of the other bigger clubs. So let me ask you, we saw a huge rise in social media footprint for Juve with Ronaldo. We had the new kit deal announced a few days ago, a minimum of 408 million. They're getting a 15 million bonus. I mean, Juve is making a huge leap. I've read it's something like 9 times higher than Napoli's kit deal the new way. So obviously he's having a big impact here. If you had to say, how close are his performances on the pitch to matching the incredible impact he's had off of them?
To be honest, I don't think they are quite there yet. I think he's been excellent. I think he's raised the level of the team as a whole. I think he's, obviously that's reflected in the record at the top of the show, we were discussing the grade for Juve's season, and we're talking about the fact that the team if it wasn't for the fact that the entire back four thought that the ball bounced out of play against Genoa, they would have won every match they've played in Serie A this season, which is an incredible start after 17 games. And Ronaldo's got 11 goals, 5 assists in Serie A so far. He's been excellent, but I don't think he's been truly at his best yet. I think there's been games and there's been spells where he's made a huge impact on the pitch. I think I look at the Napoli game where last season at home, Juve lost 1-0 to Napoli, and this season they fell 1-0 behind. And then basically Ronaldo laid on 3 goals and Juve won 3-1. And that's the difference in between having him and not having him. But I think off the pitch, his impact has been so huge and so far-reaching to the viewing figures of Serie A matches, to the kit deal, as you say, the social media following of Juve, the interactions that Juve are getting on their Facebook and their website. And just the interest in watching Juve is so much bigger. A Juve player on the front cover of the new FIFA game from EA Sports. It's huge, and it's a reach that Juve didn't have before. It's taking them to a whole new audience and a whole nother level. And I think because of the way that football is played, he can't do that on the field until April and May when there are trophies to be won. If he delivers the Champions League, we can say his impact on the pitch is as big as it has been off it. I think at the moment, because it's only the mundane group stages and the first round of the league where, yes, Juve have a healthy advantage, but that doesn't actually mean anything tangible. Certainly for now, it's the impact off the pitch where he's been the biggest difference maker.
Yep. So speaking of difference makers, if you had to pick one player who you would say was Juve's most valuable player of the season so far, who would that be?
I think there's kind of a danger in trying to just be contrary and say anybody but Ronaldo, but I think you have to say Mario Mandzukic. I mean, he's come back off the wing. He drifts back out there occasionally to let Ronaldo play through the middle, but he's back playing as a number nine. And he's just been sensational for me. He's still doing the same amount of work that he was doing before. He's still putting in the same gritty performances. But now he's adding goals as well. He's got 8 in Serie A. He's got another one in the Champions League. And he's absolutely tormenting the life out of every fullback that Juve play against. He scored what against Napoli, Inter, Roma, Lazio, Milan. He's taking it to everybody. I think the only team he didn't score against that you could consider a big game for Juve this season has been Fiorentina, and that's probably because they play Nikola Milenkovic, who's taller than Mandzukic, as a fullback. Somebody posted a picture. It was a friend of mine. I think it was a friend of mine from Singapore, Farah. She posted a picture of 4 Mandzukic goals against Inter, Roma, Milan, and Lazio. And in every single picture, there's a poor fullback, one of which is Kwadwo Asamoah, just being crushed under the weight of a towering Mandzukic header. He's been sensational. I've written about him the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
He's doing everything. And that's all you can ask for as a foil for Cristiano Ronaldo. He's been like Karim Benzema, only good. He's doing all of the donkey work, and he's scoring goals as well. He's been the perfect partner for Ronaldo, and I think the only criticism you can have of Mandzukic is he just doesn't do interviews. I've tried and failed miserably because he won't entertain it, much to the chagrin of the Juve press office, who I know at one point this season in the Champions League he was man of the match. He'd scored a goal. He was captain, and with UEFA, those circumstances, you're kind of contractually obliged to do interviews, and Mandzukic basically just told the press office that he'll take the fine and get somebody else to do it. But that's the only thing you can say in criticism of Mandzukic. Everybody, I suppose over the past few seasons, it's, oh, why is Mandzukic starting, not Douglas Costa? Mandzukic can't score goals. Well, now he has. He's the second highest goal scorer at the club, and he's doing more than anyone could ask for him because he's still doing the same amount of work he was doing before. And he's just carried on from the World Cup, hasn't he? I actually started in the intro of the article that I wrote this past few weeks. He's got to the World Cup final. He scored in the World Cup final. He scored in a Champions League final. And he gets Cristiano Ronaldo as a teammate. 2018 has been a very good year for Mario Mandzukic.
Well, that's for sure. Yeah. I mean, I have to say, at the end of last season, I thought he was slowing down. He wasn't really himself. But since then, he's been unbelievable. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Ravanelli when he was at Juve, but I would say maybe even better. So before I ask you about your articles, because the Mandzukic one was really good, I'm going to put you on the spot. You don't have to elaborate on this answer. If you want to, you can. Who do you think is going to have a bigger impact the rest of the way in the season, Emre Can or Sami Khedira?
I hope Emre Can, because I think if it's Sami Khedira, it can only be a negative. I think when we've discussed this before, but I think Sami Khedira has all the qualities of a man who's waiting for an MLS club to come in and pay him a fortune. He just does. And I, to be honest, I think you look at the performances of Bentancur and the arrival of Can, that gives you the four really high quality top-class midfielders in Can, Bentancur, Pjanic and Matuidi. And I think you can really play any combination of those three, any combination of those four in the midfield three that Allegri's opted for now. I don't think it matters really who sits out, because I think Bentancur's fully capable of deputising for Pjanic in many games. I think Can brings a solidity if he steps in instead of Bentancur, or is fully capable of playing the role that Blaise Matuidi plays as kind of the anchor in midfield. So yep. I think really Sami Khedira is going to find himself much in the position that Claudio Marchisio was in at the start of the season, where you're the fifth choice midfielder despite being quite highly paid and being a highly decorated player. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if when January rolls around, if Juve move Khedira on and maybe bring back Storaro and bring in another midfielder. For all Fabio Paratici has said that there'd be no arrivals in January, that really wouldn't surprise me, because I think Sami Khedira is going to find his playing time hugely limited in the second half of the season, because we already spoke about Bentancur. And I think Emre Can, when he's had this health issue, not a fitness issue, yeah. It was a health issue that kept him sidelined and he needed a thyroid operation. I think he's got a big role to play in the second half of the season, as I say, and I think Sami Khedira is a long way down the pecking order, kind of in the Daniele Rugani of the midfield, I suppose. He's only going to get a look in the very worst of games. And I also think there's a situation where we've seen in the past where the club's moved on players who Allegri's opted to play a little bit too much. I think Storaro going was definitely one of those. And I think maybe Paratici will move on Khedira just so that Allegri can't throw him in a big Champions League game and hurt you there.
Well, that would unite Juve Twitter if that happens for once.
Absolutely.
All right. So let's close on this. So usually when we have you on the podcast, we cover more Juve because you really are the go-to guy for this. But you write about Serie A for a lot of different sites. So we mentioned the recent Mandzukic article, which right now is pinned to your page. Those listening, if you haven't seen it, check it out. It's fantastic. But what were some of your other favorite articles of the year?
I think my favorite of all, not my favorite, but the one that I probably took greatest satisfaction from writing was the one I wrote, we discussed last time, about the ticketing at Juve Stadium and issues with the ultras. I managed to speak to some of the ultras and get some good quotes and really make a strong showing of trying to explain that whole situation that's kind of quite confusing if you're not used to the ins and outs and the intricacies of Italian fan football culture. And I really did. I don't want to say enjoy it, because I don't like seeing the fans of my club and my club at loggerheads with each other in such a manner. But I think it needed to be written, and professionally, I took great satisfaction from that. I think it was important. And then the same probably of writing about Frosinone's new stadium earlier in the year when that opened. I was fortunate enough to speak to the president of the club, who's named the stadium after his father, and it really does make a big difference for a small team like that to be able to do it. And I think the third one was probably the closest one to your heart, David, is after his first game at the World Cup, I got to write about Sergej Milinkovic-Savic and how good he is. It probably let me down in the fact that he was quite poor in the next two matches, but for that week when that article was standing on the Independent, I was quite pleased with that, because I think he was kind of a nice little secret that we had in Serie A, and he displayed it on the world stage, because with Lazio not being in the Champions League, you've got to really go out of your way to watch Lazio games in either Serie A or the Europa League. So I think it was nice to tell his story to a bigger audience and to crow about how good a talent Serie A has got, even at a club like Lazio.
Absolutely. Well, we have a great talent like you coming on our podcast frequently, and I really appreciate it. So everyone, check out Adam's great coverage of Serie A. If you forgot to get a Christmas present for a Calcio fan, in your surroundings, definitely get his book on Juve. It's brilliant. Adam, thank you so much for joining me. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
Pleasure's mine, David. Thank you very much.